Okay, here we are in September 29th, and we're starting our discussion of the 12 Apostles of Moses in the Promised Land chapter, and Baki is going to lead our discussion. And Baki is still muted.
That happens to the best of us. Hello, everybody, and yes, welcome to this great chapter, which was very important to Mormon to add. He really asked the Lord that he could add it, and he got the confirmation to do that. So it's like I think it's kind of like a appendix of the previous chapters, the Moses 17, and it's in the middle, and usually important things are in the middle, and this is a very important chapter. We're familiar with it because it's also in the Bible, but there are slight differences. So let's go ahead and read. Maybe Dewey, can you start? You're on top of my screen next. Yeah, okay, great.
12 Apostles of Moses in the Promised Land. Oops, did I just lose it? And God spoke unto Moses, God spoke unto me, Moses, and said, separate a man from each tribe, righteous men and honorable men, and princes of his people, to send them into the land of Canaan. Therefore shall your ambassadors be appointed to keep watch over the land, which I shall give unto the children of Israel for an inheritance, and to make a report for the purpose of each of these princesses, represent their tribe before all the people. When they report in a general assembly between the nations of Israel, all the good things, so they report all the good things that proceed from this place. For behold, I am giving unto you for an inheritance a land flowing with milk and honey.
Yes,
More?
you repeated it already, all the good things, which is very important to emphasize. What else do you get from this verse? What are your impressions, Dewey? Or do
well,
you have any?
Princesses, ambassadors and princesses, which I interpret as kings. So those, both an ambassador and a prince, that's, they're political leaders, not necessarily religious to me. They're both in that context.
I think it's interesting that it talks about milk and honey. Milk means there's good grazing lands for cattle, and honey means we got the insects to make the get the crops growing well. Is that kind of the way I interpret that?
Yes, and lots of flowers and blooming stuff, because you need I don't know the English name, but you need that.
Need the nectar.
I think so. Yeah. John, do you
Steve's, muted.
Steve, John, Steve.
I think another perspective is knowing the value of this book and the secrets that were sealed here about the higher sentiments, that Moses understood the trials and the need for the good feelings, the higher feelings here. And that probably is why he was pitching this so hard, that this is simple to understand for anybody. Milk and honey was something that was probably a real privilege. But, another step further in that understanding lower frequency, they were about to be faced with great challenges. And these lower sentiments are like the corrosion of faith. And from that perspective, seeing his need to pitch the Lord to please let me include this makes it a little more understandable to me.
For Mormon to ask it.
Sorry.
Because this is still an instruction from the Lord to Moses.
Yeah.
This is not an instruction from Moses to the man.
Yeah. Yeah, but
another thought. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but understanding the need to prepare people, I think, was really important.
Yes. Yeah, do we?
Yes, when I first read that and thought, man, a land of milk and honey, I don't really see Israel as, I see it as a desert, like if I was to go off in by the Great Salt Lake, but I was thinking about it. And I know in Abram's lectures on Isaiah, he suggests that when we go on the Exodus, that the Exodus will bloom with us, and turn into a prosperous land. So also got thinking, well, maybe that was true in this Exodus, where it was awful land, and then as they traveled, the land bloomed. So it actually had honey. And anyway, somewhere I'd want to be, you know.
I think
versus
that
land versus a desert with giants in it.
Yeah, I think of Israel. I think your description is similar, but the Jezreel Valley of Israel is really beautiful and very productive. And so there's really some very productive areas in Israel, although there are some desert areas too.
I don't know how, there's a lot of stuff that's been written that how Israel did bloom after they got there. But, you know, they were like Brigham Young's day. They did a lot of amazing watering and different things. So now when you look at the valley, it's like, gee, I want to live there. But anyway, in my mind, it didn't seem like a promised land.
Well, but they brought back marvelous fruits of the land.
Yeah.
So that before they got there, it was still blooming pretty good.
Good point.
Yeah. Very good. And what I also found interesting is that there are already a couple of names for these 12 men. They are, well, the 12 apostles, as it's called in the title, ambassadors, and princes. So that's three interesting roles, and they should be righteous and honorable. So these are some of the traits of these apostles and ambassadors and princes, which I also find interesting. And how important it is to make a report. I was wondering if they really wrote it down or they just verbalized it. It was a question what I was wondering about. But,
yeah, that's interesting to think about. Maybe if they had written it down and those who were negative had, you know, time to read it and review it before they spouted off at the mouth, you know, maybe things would have been different. Who knows?
Maybe. Yeah. Anybody else with an impression or a thought about this first verse?
I'll say something. As we compare Numbers chapter 13, there's a few things that are here that are not there, such as they were commanded to only report the good things. I don't think that's in Numbers. And that I think that part was reserved for our day because it has to do with the good feelings of our heart, right? And how we have to protect that so closely.
Good point, Michael. Yeah. What does it say in number again, you said?
Numbers chapter 13 is a very, very similar chapter to this one.
Yeah. And what is there, the assignment? Do you
Well,
know?
actually, verse 19 of Numbers 13 says, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds. So in Numbers,
Oh.
it actually tells them to bring back the good and the bad report.
Not a good
That's
point.
interesting. So, yeah. That is, then it change. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, like you said, Michael, right? That it's meant for this time now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, all the good things.
Well, you know, if you think about it, we go on the Exodus back to Missouri, and it just, I'm taking this to the future, and it's like totally devastated that there's just one yellow dog running around because of nuclear weapons. You might want all the most positive people possible, you know, when you go back there. I mean, if it echoes our day, Moroni, why is it so important for Moroni to put this record in? I don't think it was for history. Anyway, if you liken it unto us and the few who go back or the few that might survive, they might want the most positive people they can at that time. Anyway, that's where my head went.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. You can take a group of positive oriented, truly positive oriented people, people who bring energy to any conversation, and you can put them on a flat rock and they'll build a house. Something's good will come out of it. But you think there'll be murmurers and naysayers and people looking for criticism, you know, all of the problems? You can't get far with that. I think that's an underlying message in all this. You know, God's up here saying, I'm giving you this place for an inheritance to bring all the tell of good things that proceed from it. And you drop down there, and Moses says, I commanded that every one of them should observe the people that dwell in, whether they be strong or weak. So it leaves you a little wondering how the message got conveyed through to the people. But for those who
exactly, yeah. An interesting point there, Steve. Maybe we could talk about that in verse 4. Verse 2, Steve, can you read that?
Yes. These are their names: of the tribe of Reuben, Shemua, son of Zakur, of Simon, Japhat, the son of Horai, of Judah, Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, or Issachar, Igal, the son of Joseph, Ephraim, Hosea, son of Nun, of Benjamin, Palti, the son of Raphu, and Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sadai, of Joseph, by the tribe of Manasseh, Gadi, the son of Susi, of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gemali, of Asher, Suther, the son of Michael, of Naphtali, Nabi, the son of Opshi, of Gad, Guel, the son of Machi. These are the men whom I, Moses, sent to spy out that land. And to Hosea, the son of Nun, I, Moses, gave the name of Joshua.
Any thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I was looking at the difference between Hosea and Joshua. Hosea means save, and Joshua means the Lord saves.
Oh, thank you. Great. Wow. And Brother Bob.
Yeah, I was trying to contemplate the reason for these that were chosen spies to be apostles. I think in the previous chapter, at the end of the previous chapter, it's clear that they were apostles. And I'm just trying to relate that to our experience today. Why would the spies need to be or were sent as apostles? And if they're apostles in the church, I mean, that indicates that, of course, Moses established the church, and that these were high priests then. Well, no, I take that back. I'm not sure on that. But I'm just trying to think through that. Why these were apostles?
Doesn't the word apostle just mean sent?
Oh, could be.
I think in the Greek, at least, that's what it means. The apostles are those sent, something like that.
But it's interesting, the names, because we had, they are apostles, they are ambassadors, they are princes, and now suddenly they're spies. So that's another role that they have.
But may I comment again that it's interesting in our current situation, in the revelations that Brother Mauricio received to call two sets of apostles. And they were to be this, I think Brother Samuel was told to pick a man out of every tribe. And so, I mean, it's there's some significance here. I'm not quite getting it, but thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question on that, Robert. Is that when he picks these men, did they then get adopted into the tribe? I mean, basically, most of us, I assume, our patriarch blessings say we're from Ephraim. So how did he pick up?
I believe that's correct, Brother Dewey.
Yeah, that then they're assigned out a tribe, Judah or whatever. Anyway, it's one of those things I was thinking about. Well, where are they going to find Zad? Anyway, some of these other tribes that are, anyway, that was one of the things I was pondering about from that recent revelation, is how that would work.
I think as far as bloodlines, we probably all have every tribe in our bloodline. Doesn't take very many generations for that mixing to occur.
Well, it's also, yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
No, you go ahead.
I focus in on Caleb being son of Judah, and Hosea of Ephraim. And to me, that's, you know, that's a, what you want to call it, light bulb goes off or whatever, but why only those that would at the end of this bring a good report, you know, of Judah and Ephraim? And I think it has to do with the scepter and the birthright. I don't know if everyone's probably read that book, but if you haven't, it's a great book to read, Judah's Scepter and Joseph's Birthright. But I have to think that, you know, that has something to play with this.
Well, the Hosea is from the tribe of Benjamin. And
it says, is it? I thought it was of Ephraim, Hosea.
No, the of Ephraim was the, oh, I see. You're saying, oh, the tribe is mentioned first and then, oh, okay. I was thinking it's the other way around. Yes.
But just interesting thought.
Yeah. If you count up the number of tribes, there's 12. The one missing is Levi. He's not represented, obviously. And Joseph is represented twice through Ephraim and Manasseh. So you still got the 12 tribes, but only Levi is missing from this list.
Yeah, because they were not allowed to, because they were priests, right? They were not allowed to.
Yeah, they bless all the tribes. And so, yeah.
Also, interesting point. I watched a little bit of the meeting with our brother Jean-Paul Pratt, and in 2021, and he pointed out that like the listing of the tribes is like 5 to 6 times it occurs in the Bible, and every time they're in a different order. Except for, yeah, they start with Reuben, who is the oldest, but and then after that, it's just, yeah, different. So still not have looked into that, why that is, or if it has a meaning, probably has a meaning. But yeah, it was also an interesting observation. Rex, do you want to do first number 5? 4?
4. Yes. It came to pass that I, Moses, commanded that every one of them should observe the people that dwell in it, whether they were strong or weak, whether they were few or many, whether their cities were fortified or not, whether the land was fertile or withered, if there were trees and beds of rivers.
Yes.
So we get some similarity to the Hebrews record there. They're not supposed to, you know, he's not telling them to pass judgment. He's just saying report, you know. He's not saying, I want your opinion. He's saying, just tell me this or that, you know.
Yes, but there's nothing about all the good things.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting. He left that out. I don't know. It made me wonder how giving instructions can go so bad so quickly. Yeah. I don't know if it goes bad, but it is, yeah. You know, we have a game here. We sit in, like children play it. You sit in a circle and you say a sentence to the one next to you. And then at the end, you hear the sentence back and it's totally changed sometimes. So, there was a thought I had when reading this, like, where are all the good things? Any other thoughts? Then we can go to 5. Brother Bob, could you read verse 5?
So the 12 went up, and when they returned, they brought with them a cluster of grapes, for it was the days of the first fruits, where the grapes came forth. And behold, these grapes were so great that it was necessary, 2 men with a staff piercing the bunch to carry them.
Does anybody know when the times of the first were? I wanted to look it up, but I did not have time when the time of the first fruits is. But is it in spring or is it in
I think
in
it's
fall?
Like June. I think it's like June for grapes.
In June?
I'm not sure.
Our grapes sort of start to turn in about, midsummer, and by the end of summer they're gone. So
And also interesting, because I was when I was watching the previous video, I was like, oh, who would have carried it? Probably Caleb and Joshua. But then Kevin, I believe, said, no, but they were princes, so probably they had some people with them. You know, they were like, not only the 12 were going out, but they had probably some servants with them. I don't know. He said that. I thought, oh yeah, it's also possible, of course, because if you have these princes, don't know if they, but again, they were almost 40 years in a desert, because they were all almost entering the promised land. So
I looked up first fruits, and it's first fruits celebrated 3 days after Passover. So it's kind of a, anyway, so that's
really
midsummer. Wow. Well, that's what the internet says, is it?
Yeah.
So that would be around April, June, right?
Or March, April. Yeah, actually, this one here I'm reading, the Feast of First Fruits was celebrated in the Jewish month Nisan, roughly late March to early April.
Okay. So 3 days after Passover, so Pesach,
it says it marks the day that Christ rose again.
Yeah,
the symbology of it.
Yeah.
Which fits the first fruits coming forth.
Yes. Anyway, big grapes, good news. Michael, do you want to read verse 6?
Yeah.
Maybe 7 also? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do both. And at the end of the 40 days since they left, Egypt, right? So this is the beginning. This is before the 40 years.
Oh, is it before, you think?
Yeah, because didn't they... No. Had they actually been righteous and had those good feelings and entered the promised land, they could have avoided that whole 40-year period altogether. But because the Lord in his wrath, the people were complaining, he's like, all right, this generation, you're not going to see the promised land. We're gonna wander. Am I right?
Sure.
Okay, so I was wrong.
I actually was on the other side. I thought they were coming into the promised land and they'd camped, and then they were sending out spies to see if they could take it. Anyway, that was my perception. It's 40 years later from Egypt.
I thought so too, but...
Well, what's 40 years later? The spies are before the 40 years. That's why they had 40 years, because the bad report.
Oh, it's okay. So I got that wrong, huh?
Oh, me too.
Og of battles and Amalekites and having to all the things that happened in Old Testament stories. Right, Bob? They came in.
Yeah, I'm looking on John Pratt's website of his all the dates. And it says the 12 spies began on Tuesday, July 12th in the year 1460 BC.
No way. Tuesday, July 12th?
Oh. That's what it says here. And then they return Saturday, August 20th of that same year. So they were gone for roughly 5 weeks. And I'm not sure how he's calculating this, but yeah, it was in July, August, apparently.
I think a lot of his calculations tie into where the sacred calendar days are and finding ones that match up with the events.
Yeah. But that would not coordinate with the first fruit date. Right?
Yeah, if the first fruits was in March.
April.
Or April.
March, April.
July. Yeah, that's 3 months. This is 3 months after that.
Hmm.
Anyway, I'll finish. At the end of the 40 days since they left Egypt, they stood before Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel and began to tell them what they saw and to show them the fruits of the land. And they said unto them, We have gone into the land which thou hast sent us. And truly, it flowed with milk and honey, as the Lord said unto his servant Moses. See, this is its fruit. Behold, the people marveled at the quality and the size of the grapes, and were filled with enthusiasm by the account of Caleb and Joshua. So there you go, Belkia. Maybe it was Caleb and Joshua who were the ones that carried the fruit.
Maybe.
Now, I want to mention, this does not mean necessarily first fruits. This is going to be the last fruits. The fruits, but it's a time of the year where they collected them was when they did.
Yeah.
It says in 5, it was the day of the first fruits.
Yeah, whenever their grapes came.
Oh,
forth.
when they returned, it was the first fruits. Yeah, I don't know. That is interesting.
I had a thought on verse 6. I've always read this as being the 40 days is when the apostles left and returned. It was 40 days. That's the way I've always read it, but it's interesting that, you know, it's brought up that it could be 40 days since they left Egypt.
No, I think you're right, actually, because 5 weeks, isn't that 40 days? So if they left in July and came back August 20th, that would have been 40 days. So they were dwelling in the land, spying in the land for 40 days. That sounds more correct than what I was saying about, I inserted the part about Egypt, but 40 days since they left, meaning since they went into the land to scout it out. I think you're right.
I thought
always understood it was 40 years they wandered. I mean, it took them a long time to get rid of that generation, rebellious generation. So this must be when they camped and then 40 days from as they're exploring the land, as Rex was saying, suggesting.
Yep.
Any other ideas or comments or insights?
I just have a footnote, my own footnote that I added. They were filled with enthusiasm.
Yeah.
If we go back to Moses chapter 4, verse 17, sealed Moses.
Yeah.
You know this one, Belkia? This is
yes.
The Lord speaking unto Enoch. And he says, What makes you pleasing to my eyes? Because never before have I found in one man the fullness of my name engraved on his heart, just as there is within you the feelings of charity, enthusiasm, peace of the spirit, resignation to withstand adversities, benignity, compassion, faith, tenderness, and self-control, believing that you will attain a higher kingdom with such gifts that are in you. Seek to have with you a congregation of those who resemble you.
Yes. The congregation did not resemble.
Yeah.
Well, in the beginning they were filled with enthusiasm by the account of Caleb and Joshua. So they were touched by their stories with enthusiasm. Yeah. But then Russell, you read verse 8?
Sure. But the 10 other spies reported to them, saying, Behold, the people that dwell in the land are mighty, as we have heard of the Nephthalim, who were the children of Anak before the flood, and their cities are exceedingly fortified and very great. Beyond these are the Amalekites that dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites that dwell in the mountain, and the Canaanites that dwell by the sea and by the river Jordan.
Yeah, so the 10 other spies, princes, apostles, ambassadors, so they're not ambassadors anymore. Because if you're ambassador, you're promoting, right? But now they were reporting the scary things, at least, yeah. the Nephilim, who were the Anak, the children of Anak, were survivors who were children of Anak before the flood. So they survived the flood, right?
That's what it implies.
Yes. Big cities and all the other tribes that are listed here. I don't know much about them. I know the names because they're in the Bible, and usually they're associated with war, I believe.
Yeah, I'm comparing this with Moses, Sealed Moses, chapter 14, verse 11, where it lists out the names of the people that dwelt in that land.
Oh, yeah.
The Amalekites, Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites,
yep. Canaanites.
We also have in verse 11, Perizzites. Perizzites. So maybe those were the Nephilim. Because I'm counting six different things in chapter 14, verse 11, six different peoples. And in this verse, verse 8, it's only showing five, but then you have the Nephilim up above, which would be the sixth. So maybe they were the Perizzites.
And it says there, you're right in verse 11, those are the tribes who have been infected by your progeny, by Anakiel and his rebellious angels, before they were all thrown into prison when they made a pact with Satan on Mount Hermon just after the waters of the flood to dry.
Yeah,
so
for that reason they were commanded to exterminate them, because these tribes had all been infected.
Mm-hmm.
Evil feelings.
Yeah. I can read verse 9. And it came to pass that Caleb shut up the people, saying, let us go up quickly and take this land for an inheritance, because we will surely prevail against it and get the best that exists in all the regions around us. I like it that it says shut up. It makes me think of Mauricio when we were in Brazil, we were together. Together with a group of people, and people talking, blah, blah, blah. And suddenly Mauricio, shut up! And it was like,
yeah.
It's just, do you remember, Steve? It was, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was had no trouble pronouncing that. Shut up.
No. But it was like he learned something, you know, as a child, when you learn, like, maybe a word that makes an impression, because it's not very polite to say that. Yeah, it was an interesting moment. And the people shut up, which was good. But Caleb also shut up the people. He wants to get a move on. Let us go up, not only go up, but go up quickly. So there was a kind of a haste. Because we will surely prevail against it and get the best that exists in all the regions around us. And yeah.
Well, I'm sure there was a great division in the people, because I would be fearful about going to war. And then there's all the rumor mill of they're the giants. And anyway, I could see where it would take a pretty strong leader to say, never mind the facts, God is with us, let's go. But it'd be scary. I mean, it's not like they've been to war they've been just hanging out with each other for 40 years. So anyway.
But the unknown is always scary, especially when you hear reports of giants.
Yeah.
But yeah, same is now going on, you know, we working on the place of refuge, and there's a certain urgency. But like the speech yesterday from Brother Jefferson, right? Mm-hmm. Was it? Yeah, Jefferson. And to be comfortable. Comfortable is also because in a way they were comfortable with how they were, of course. And now they were supposed to go in a land with giants and all other tribes that are not so friendly, probably. So it has similarities with the state we are in now, of course. Brother Dewey, could you read verse 10?
But the rest of the men who watched over the land said, while Caleb, do not be naive, for we cannot go up against that people, for they are stronger than we are. Behold, there is nothing good for us in that place. For the land which we had passed through to spy is a land that consumes its inhabitants. And all the people that we see in it are men of great stature. Yea, we saw their giants, sons of Anak, as our ancestors told us, that they existed before the flood. But we testified that the descendants of the giants still exist, and we are like locusts in front of them. Anyway, I imagine you're sitting here trying to rile the troops, and you don't want any truth tellers that is like who honestly say, hey, this for me, this is the reality. It's scary. I mean, they're not thinking that they have the power of the Lord with them. They're just thinking, in my own strength, I'm kind of scared of giants. And anyway, I could see why. At that moment, decisive moment, they needed someone that, and we may need this in the future, that these decisive moments happen to us when, for instance, we in Utah head back to Missouri, or people from Brazil, it's like, why do we need to go? It's kind of good here. Anyway, wherever you're at and making an exodus, I could see where these sentiments would go through people's minds in our day. You know, there's gangs out there, roaming gangs, like some of the Doomsday movies. And you'd have to, anyway, I could see where people would think this in our day.
Mm-hmm. I think they would think that in any day. I mean, we understand people, and our vision is limited, and we don't remember Proverbs 3:5. It's not on our lips all the time, but they're going to worry about security, going to worry about what they're going to eat, where they're going to sleep, what the kids going to do. But that wasn't news to the Lord, and I think preparing a people, even then like it is now, is going to be trying to teach things like anthropos and estima, waking people up, getting them ready, getting them prepared, because just to get you out of your house and make you go somewhere else, you know, it takes a lever, and you can have all the logic and common sense and experience to justify that. But, you know, left to that, we never make any difference. We never leave comfort. I think that talk is very right on point with Jefferson.
Yeah, I was thinking about the princes. It says the apostles were princes and leaders. And in my thinking, they probably had pretty cushy situation in Egypt, in my line of thinking. It was, you know, the underlings that were doing all the work, and That possibly, it probably came, brought some into play in this that, where they're thinking that, man, we would have had it better in Egypt. Again, there, that comfort, it was comfortable for us. So anyway, that's just a thought. Thank you.
On the other side of that, about you're talking about mobs and that kind of stuff, I was just looking, I think yesterday, and I saw they picked up, I think in Kaysville, Utah, some illegal immigrants from the border crisis up there, the Venezuelan mobs. I don't know exactly. I didn't get all the details, but sure was an abrupt change of normal for the people that were reporting on the news about that. And things are changing.
Especially in Utah, they're not used to those kind of things, I
I think
think.
it was Harriman was the town in Utah, not Kaysville. I heard about that a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Harriman, which is on the south end of Utah Valley, or excuse me, the Salt Lake Valley, before you get down into Point of the Mountain.
Yeah, they reported it in Kaysville because I thought of you.
Yeah, I
But
didn't hear about that. I'm in Kaysville, and I didn't hear about it, but maybe I'm just not up on what's happening.
there are a lot of prophecies that, as people who don't want to go to war with each other will come to the Rocky Mountains because there'll be relative peace compared to what's out there. We go in, according to Isaiah, we go into civil war. Sometimes when I switch between MSCBN and Fox News, I go, man, it's like a different world between these two stations. But I just think when I switch back and forth between those two, I just think, man, the war has continued from the pre-existence, and it's here now, and America's best days are short-lived. I don't know how much longer. Gosh, when you look at just what has happened in 2 weeks, if you follow Israel, holy cow. And Russia still says, is rattling, we will use our nuclear weapons. So things could deteriorate really fast in 5 years. It could really be dangerous to just be out on the streets traveling here and there. Anyway, a bit of gloom and doom this Sunday. Thank goodness things are good now, right?
And we understand some things about, the adversary's attempts to lock us in these lower frequencies, if you will, anger and hate and rage, and what I see, or what I perceive is this country's being stimulated to anger and division, whether it's MSN, it doesn't matter. They're all. And they're doing a good job of it. I mean, you come back into this country after being in Brazil for a while, and the first thing you know is everybody's mad or looking for a reason to be. It's what it seems, feels like. But just like with the Lamanites and the Nephites and the Jaredites, you give them contention and then fuel it with something like religion or peace or war or whatever that you find that is their most hot poker to give them a poke with, and you're going to get the same thing playing out. When do we learn? It's the same old, same old. And I can't help but think about that image in my mind of reading in the scriptures about Satan standing on the earth with the chains in his hand laughing. That's what this feels like to me.
Yes.
Higher sentiments.
Yeah, that's a challenge because, like you said, the people are mad or looking for a reason to be mad. And but it's never been so clear as right now, and especially in America with the upcoming elections, and that makes it so two camps.
But the good news, I think, is we want to find the good feelings is to focus on, we were told all this. He knows all this.
Mm-hmm.
Playing out according to God's plans. And just like these spies, what's the good news in that? That we're going to get past this. It's going to be much better.
Mm. We
show up and just keep doing the next right thing.
Yep. I see at the clock that it has been an hour, I think. Yeah, what do you think? Shall we stop here at, let me see.
Did we read verse 12?
Sorry?
Did we already read verse 12? I can't remember.
No, we just stopped here at, they're going to stone them in 11. We stopped at the locust. So, let's continue next week.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Thank you.